Chapter 12. With the Tower of Crimson and Ash toppled, and the Dark Sorcerer and his followers all dead, my friends and I decided to get out of here before the people of Ryashore realized we'd killed their leader. I didn't think the regular villagers in Ryashore would have been much of a threat, and I was sure that most of them were innocent people who had just been brainwashed into following the Dark Sorcerer and his evil ways. If we could get out of here without any more bloodshed, I would be happy as a lark. Caltrice, Lyca, and Nike climbed onto my back, and then the seven of us took off out of the valley and into the evening sun. We flew up over the mountain range and passed over the bustling village of Ryashore, where I noticed people were clamoring about the streets. A few of them were already marching in the direction of the Tower of Crimson and Ash, but they froze in their tracks when they saw us pass overhead. I was sure they were all putting two and two together by now, but by the time they'd discovered the tower's ruins, we'd all be long gone. Zoklan, Zarak, Smari, and I flew onward until Ryashore was nothing more than a distant memory. As we flew, the sun began to set over the horizon, and several glowing tendrils of lava in the ground below set the sky ablaze with a ruby glow.
"Go on,"
Caltrice teased Zarak.
"Tell me Kyoso isn't beautiful." "Indeed,"
Lyca added with a playful laugh.
"This looks far more beautiful than what you're used to in your cell, for sure."
"All right, all right," Zarak huffed. "I never saw it like this before. It's still pretty barren and hostile during the day, though."
We flew on into the night for many miles more until we finally arrived at the gates of Ashmoor. This time, though, we skipped all the formalities. Instead of landing at the city gates and letting Caltrice use her magic, we simply flew over the walls and then continued above the capital until we finally saw the temple that housed the High Sage and all of the prominent sorcerers of the city. We landed before the doors of the temple, and then my friend slid off my back before Zoklan, Zarak, and I all turned back into humans. Caltrice then performed the incantation that opened up the temple door, and we hurried inside. There seemed to be more people in the temple this time around, many of which were meditating on the ground. Several more chatted casually as they walked about the hallways, but we quickly made our way past them and to the door of Damel's quarters. We pushed them open to find Redmond crouched down next to the High Sage, with a goblet in his hand.
"Drink up, my friend," Redmond whispered to Damel as he tilted the cup up to the kangaroo demi-human's lips.
My superhuman hearing picked up a small whimper from Caltrice as we approached the High Sage, and I honestly couldn't blame her. Damel looked even more frail and weak than the last time we'd seen him, and I knew it must have been hard for her to see a man she'd looked up to her whole life on death's door. Of course, I knew what it was like. I'd gone through the same thing with my mom all those years ago.
They return," Damel said,
as a weak smile rose up his face, and he pointed in our direction.
"The Dark Sorcerer. Did you get the staff?"
"You don't have to worry about Yggdrasil Urshauer any longer," I promised the High Sage. "He is dead, as are the majority of his followers."
"They were preparing to attack Ashmoor, Father,"
Caltrice explained.
"They were going to kill Damel, and then they were going to head to Rama and kill King Rodion."
"Then it is a good thing you got to him first."
Damel smiled warmly.
"I know. I can rest easy knowing that this world is in good hands."
"Rest easy?"
Caltrice gulped as tears filled her eyes.
"Damel, please don't talk like that."
"I'm not going anywhere right now,"
the High Sage promised.
"But only the gods know how many days I have left in this world. What I do know is that, thanks to Lord Evan and his friends, Kyoso will remain safe from any of the dark forces that try to push their way into this world."
"The Shaded Scepter, I presume?"
Redmond asked, as he nodded to the staff in Zoklan's hands.
"Aye," my father confirmed. "We literally pried it from Yggdrasil Urshauer's cold, dead hands."
"He wasn't dead when you melted his arm off, brother,"
Zarak chuckled.
"A technicality," Zoklan mused. "The point is that we now have the scepter, which is the key to closing the breach for good.
See?
Damel said with an amused smirk.
The world will be safe, even long after I'm gone.
I hate to ask this, I began. But could I possibly ask for your city's hospitality, just for one night? I told Aliona to come back and take us home in the morning, and my friends and I will need a place to stay in the meantime.
Don't be ridiculous, Lord Evan,
the High Sage chuckled, but then he broke into a fit of coughing.
Of course, you can all stay here. Redman, would you be so kind as to help me prepare a few temple rooms?
You're in no condition to walk, let alone prepare rooms, Redman said to the High Sage. I will have some of the other sages do it.
We don't need anything fancy, I promised. Just a roof over our heads.
Honestly,
Lyca noted.
I've slept in some pretty strange places during my travels with the Blue Tree Guild, so I'm not picky. Give me a spot on the ground and a stone for a pillow, and I'll make it work.
Some blankets and pillows might be nice, though, Sarek admitted. I've been sleeping in a straw bed with nothing but a burlap sack for a pillow for the last few days.
And I'm afraid you'll be going back there once this is all said and done, I reminded my uncle.
All the more reason to enjoy myself while I'm a free dragon, Zarek shrugged.
Follow me,
Redman chuckled. The noble of the Sword of Wisdom shuffled toward the doors, and then he shoved them open and gestured for us to all follow. We walked out into the main room of the temple, where we were then led over to a group of meditating sages who sat in a circle. They all had their heads bowed and their legs crossed, with their hands out to their sides at 45-degree angles.
May we help you, Redman? One of the men, a fox demihuman, asked as he opened one eye.
The High Sage has asked that we prepare rooms for our esteemed guests, Redman explained. At once.
The fox sage nodded, and then he opened his other eye and slowly stood to his feet. The rest of the sages in the circle followed his lead before they sauntered down a long stone corridor, and we watched them the whole way and noticed they finally stopped about 3/4 of the way down the hallway. The 10 sages seemed to pair off, and then the groups of 2 walked into nearby rooms and disappeared.
What exactly do they have to prepare?
Smari asked.
We don't really need any special accommodations.
Mainly, they are checking to see if other sages or sorcerers have occupied the rooms, Redman said. This is a communal temple, so we do not believe in any sort of individual ownership of rooms, food, or even clothes. Those rooms are available for everyone, which means they very well could be occupied currently.
We waited for a few more minutes before, finally, the sages shuffled back into the hallway and then returned to us.
We have 6 rooms available, the fox demihuman noted.
I hope a few of you are all right with sharing.
I'm perfectly fine with sharing, I promised. Hell, I'd be grateful even if all 7 of us had to cram into a closet. I just appreciate your High Sage's kindness.
He is wise beyond his years, the fox demihuman smiled. Long may he reign.
Long may he reign, the other sages repeated in unison. Redman and Caltrice shared a somber, knowing look, but neither of them dared to say anything about Damel's current state.
I'll stay with Zarek, Zilklan offered, to make sure he doesn't try to sneak out in the middle of the night.
Really, brother? Zarek scoffed. Do you truly think so little of me?
Yes, my father retorted without missing a beat.
I thought you said you vouched for me on your honor.
I did, Zilklan grumbled. It's your honor I'm worried about.
That hurts.
Not as much as it'd hurt to wake up to find you've run away. Evan's subjects would be calling for my head.
And I would personally lead the search party to bring you in,
Lyca added, as she narrowed her eyes at Zarek.
And if I found you, it would be much, much worse than anything Zoclan could even conceive of doing to you.
It's settled then, Redman mused. You all have rooms for the night. They are not much, but granting you a good night's sleep is the least the High Sage can do.
Thank you, Redman, I said, as I gave the noble a slight bow. I shall return the favor to Kieso once I am king.
I probably won't be alive to see it, Redmond chuckled. Though I have no doubt you will keep your word.
Haven't you heard, Father?
Caltrice asked with a raised eyebrow.
Lord Evan and Princess Aliona are being crowned tomorrow.
Tomorrow? The old sage gasped. Goodness! What is wrong with King Rodion?
Nothing, I said, even though it was a partial lie. He just feels he can help Rama better if he doesn't have to worry about all of his kingly duties.
Well then, Redmond smirked. You have my early congratulations, Lord Evan. To think, the temple can now say royalty has graced its walls.
Don't get too carried away, I chuckled. I'll still always be the same Lord Evan you know and love. I'll just have a title change, that's all.
Don't be so humble, brother, Nike teased. Becoming the king of Rama is a major occasion.
If we don't shut the breach, it won't matter who is king, I sighed. Let's get that done first, and then I'll take a step back and celebrate my new title and everything else.
I look forward to celebrating with you, Lord Evan, Redmond said with a bow. Good night.
Good night, I said to the noble, who then turned and walked back down the hall.
Where is his room?
Smarri whispered to Caltrice.
Like he said,
Caltrice explained.
Nobody in this temple has their own room aside from the High Sage. Not that my father sleeps much, anyways. He's often awake from sundown to sunrise, researching new spells and training other sages in the ways of our magic. At the moment, though, I'd guess he's staying with Daemal.
I can see why, Nike said with a frown. The High Sage does not appear to be long for this world.
No, Zarek shook his head. He certainly doesn't.
I saw tears start to well up in Caltrice's eyes as she stared off into the distance, so I tried to change the subject.
Oh, I think we should all call it a night, I said with a fake yawn. I don't know about you, but I'm fucking exhausted. Destroying a tower and killing a powerful dark sorcerer really takes it out of you.
I couldn't have said it better myself,
Xoclan smiled, and then he held out the shaded scepter.
Take it, Evan, for safekeeping.
Now you think I'm going to steal the scepter, too?
Zarek asked with a roll of his eyes.
Come on, brother.
I don't think you're going to steal the scepter, Xoclan admitted. But I know Evan is the strongest person here, and we need to ensure it is protected. If we were to somehow lose the scepter again, it would spell very bad things for this world.
I won't let it out of my sight, I said, as I plucked the silver and gold staff from my father's hand. The shaded scepter was cold to the touch, and its purple gemstones seemed to glint under the dull red light of the temple. Even though it was made of metal, the scepter felt a lot lighter than it looked, and I weighed it in my hands a few times as I looked it over. There were intricate carvings all down the staff, written in a language I wasn't familiar with, and for some strange reason my translation spell couldn't even pick up what they were saying. I was sure that the elders of Hatra or Aliona could help translate it, though.
It's hard to believe a metal walking stick is the key to all this, Nike chuckled. The gods sure do have an ironic sense of humor. Good night, brother.
Good night, I said to Nike. And then the noble walked off into one of the empty rooms. Smarri and Caltrice both went off to their individual rooms, as Xoclan motioned for Zarek to follow him into theirs.
I'm coming, Zarek said with a roll of his eyes. We do not need to be attached at the wing, brother.
After the rest of my friends had disappeared into their rooms, I headed to mine. There was a simple wooden door made up of several vertical planks that had been cut to the length of the door and crudely rounded off at the top, complete with a simple iron ring that acted as the doorknob. The door seemed to be wedged into place, so it took a bit of a pull to dislodge it and pull it free. It finally opened up with a soft creak, and I slipped inside and admired the room around me. There wasn't much to it, which shouldn't have been surprising given the fact I was in a spiritual temple. Much like the rest of the building, the floors, walls, and ceilings were made out of lava rock, and the whole thing was illuminated by the glowing veins of magma that snaked around the room. There was what appeared to be a queen-sized bed in the far corner of the room, which was right next to a small stone wash basin atop a rocky column.
I also noticed a stone on the opposite side of the room had a divot carved into it to form a chair, as well as a bit of straw and a mat I assumed was for meditation purposes. A 5-star resort this was not. Still, at this point, I was ready to crash. I stripped down to my skivvies as I tossed my robe to the ground, and then I plopped into the bed and laid the shaded scepter down beside me. "There shouldn't be an issue with putting this in my spatial storage, right?" I asked Mariah.
"I do not believe so,"
Mariah answered me.
"It was the dark sorcerer who was evil and full of dark magic, not the scepter itself. And there is obviously plenty of room left in that pocket dimension."
Without even sitting up, I opened my spatial storage and slid the shaded scepter inside. Once it was out of sight, I laid back against the coarse pillow on the bed, slid my hands behind my head, and closed my eyes. "We kicked ass today, Mariah," I chuckled.
"We sure did, Evan,"
the spirit giggled.
"Now we can move on to bigger and better things, like your coronation."
If I'm being completely honest, I sighed. "I don't even care about that right now. Like, don't get me wrong, I want to become king. And I want Rodion to get his hard-earned retirement, but there are way more important things going on right now. Did you see how large the breach had gotten the last time we flew over it?"
"I did. I fear if action is not taken soon, the Demon King will be able to break through, along with all of his minions."
"Me too," I admitted. "I may be the strongest being in all of Rama now, but I doubt even I'd be able to ward off an entire army of demons."
"That's why you got the scepter,"
Mariah reminded me.
"You won't have to worry about this much longer, Evan."
"No, but I will have to worry about going into the breach and trying to close it from within. That brings up a whole new set of concerns."
"Try not to think about them right now,"
the spirit implored.
"Right now, focus on how beautiful Aliona will look in her coronation dress."
"Coronation dress?" I asked. "That's a thing in this world?"
"It's the most important thing,"
Mariah chuckled.
"The clothes worn at your coronation are the clothes you are portrayed as wearing in your royal portrait. A portrait that will be hung in the king's palace, along with the other portraits of Rama's ruler since the beginning of time. A portrait that will be immortalized forever."
"And when was somebody going to tell me this?" I chuckled.
"Like you said, Evan, there are much more important things at play in the coming days. I doubt King Rodion was too concerned with the royal portrait, considering his current state."
"But you think Aliona will be?"
"She is a princess. Aliona has probably been thinking about her coronation day since she was a little girl. I would wager she's had her dress, hairstyle, and accessories picked out for years already."
"And I'm wearing a raggedy black robe," I snorted. "Wonderful."
"I'm sure there will be options for you tomorrow,"
Mariah said.
"King Rodion may currently be weakened and distracted, but I'm sure Castor will ensure everything goes smoothly."
"Thank the gods for that," I mused. "Is there anything else I should be aware of with this coronation? Even though I've been here for a while now, this is all new to me."
"It's mostly symbolic,"
the spirit explained.
"Though there will be a point where you and Rodion will make a blood pact, where you will be given the blood of all former rulers. Other than that, there's just a lot of talking, incantations, blessings, and the like."
"So, pretty much like a wedding, but with more blood," I chuckled to myself. "I can do that. But what about Rodion? Does transferring the kingship to me really take that much of a burden off him?"
"It will. The blood pact is one of the few non-symbolic parts of the ceremony, as you will actually receive the magic of Rama's former rulers when Rodion's blood joins with yours, just as he received it when he became king."
"So that'll make me even more powerful?" I asked.
"In theory,"
Mariah admitted.
"Though I'm not sure how that's possible. I am one with your spirit, Evan, and even I have never felt such power in a single being before."
"Well, I need every ounce of power I can get. I doubt the Demon King is going to be a pushover, if I should ever meet him." Even though I sounded confident, I knew I was in denial. If I really had to enter the breach and immerse myself in that demonic world, there was no way I'd be able to avoid a confrontation with the Demon King. He'd been trying to tear open the breach for thousands of years, and if he even thought for a minute I stood a chance at closing it, he'd personally be there to stop me himself. One way or another, this didn't end until either the Demon King or I was dead. I just hoped I would be strong enough when the time came. My thoughts were interrupted by a soft knock on the door, and I sat straight up in bed as adrenaline pumped through my veins. All of my friends should have been in their rooms, and Aliona wasn't coming back until the morning. I slid out of bed as quietly as I could, and then I walked over to the door and prepared to pull the Sword of Hatra out of my spatial storage. "Who's there?" I demanded.
"It's me, Lord Evan,"
Caltrice's voice answered.
"May I come in?"
A wave of relief washed over me as my heartbeat slowed down, and then I walked over to my robe and tossed it back over my shoulders. I came back to the door, opened it up, and was met with the sight of Caltrice in nothing but a simple tan robe. The top of the robe was slightly open, and I could see the glint of the gemstones that sat just above her line of cleavage. "What are you doing here?" I asked. "Shouldn't you be in your own room?"
"I cannot sleep, Lord Evan,"
she sighed.
"I know you probably are tired and do not wish to hear me complain, but you are the person in this temple that I know the best, other than my father, but I will not worry him with this sort of talk."
"What sort of talk?"
It's about the High Sage,"
Caltrice explained as she averted her gaze.
"I know he's on his deathbed, Evan, and that scares me."
Caltrice's brown eyes welled up with tears as her bottom lip began to quiver. So I stepped to the side and gestured for her to enter. The silver-haired sorceress came into my room, where she instantly began to pace back and forth as she looked down at the floor somberly. "Are you all right?" I asked, even though I already knew the answer.
"I'm afraid to admit I'm not,"
Caltrice retorted.
"I've known the High Sage my whole life, Lord Evan. And now I have to watch him wither away before my eyes. It's not fair."
"I know," I added. "Believe it or not, I've been in this exact situation before."
"You have?"
the sorceress gasped. "With my mother," I said. "I was really young at the time and didn't fully understand what was going on, but the memories still haunt me to this day. I remember vividly. It's fucking terrible."
"I'm sorry, Evan."
Caltrice shook her head and chuckled.
"Listen to me. I'm sitting here complaining about a good friend of mine when you've suffered much more hardship. I'll go back to my room."
"You don't have to do that," I said to the sorceress as she took a step for the door. "You're in pain right now, Caltrice. What kind of future king would I be if I didn't lend an ear to my subjects who need it? I understand what you're going through, and I know how much it helps to just vent it all out. So, please, let me listen." Caltrice's purple lips twisted into a small grin, though tears were still streaming down her face. Then she wiped them away before she cleared her throat and let out a little sigh.
"Thank you, Lord Evan,"
she said.
"You have no idea how much this means to me."
I walked over to the bed, sat down, and padded for Caltrice to take a seat. She plopped down beside me, and then she began to pour her heart out. Caltrice talked about all the happy memories she had with the High Sage, how he was like a second father to her, and how it wasn't fair that he was being called by the gods so soon. Caltrice seemed to preemptively go through the 5 stages of grief before my very eyes, and she soon came to the anger part of the cycle. She expressed the frustration she held toward her father for keeping Damel's condition a secret to both herself and to the other sages in Ashmuar, and she talked about how she would never have done such a thing. "I know this sounds generic as hell," I said in a cautious tone, "but your father was only keeping it a secret to protect you and the city. You heard what he said. If people knew the High Sage was ill, then there'd be all sorts of parties vying to take over via political means. That's not something that would help Damel's condition, nor is it something the city needs in a time of crisis."
"But it will happen eventually,"
Caltrice sighed.
"Even though the threat of the Dark Sorcerer is gone, There will come a day in the near future when Daemal will pass, and then we'll have to go through the whole process anyways.
You'll have time to prepare, though, I reminded her. Plus, there's no way Daemal doesn't name your father as his successor. If that's the High Sage's deathbed wish, then anybody who tries to challenge it will look like a total ass and probably won't get much support.
Maybe you're right. It still makes me angry, though.
And that's okay, I chuckled. Trust me, if there's anything I've learned about being a leader lately, it's that sometimes you have to tell a little white lie to protect the ones you care about. That's what your father was doing, Caltrice. He wanted to protect you, and I promise you, he knew you'd be mad when you actually found out. Caltrice's bottom lip quivered as she mulled over my words. And then she leaned over and laid her head on my shoulder. The silver-haired sorceress wrapped her arm around my elbow before she slid her hand into mine and squeezed it tight.
Is it okay if I stay here, Evan?
She asked in a timid tone.
If I go back to my room, I'll be alone with my thoughts. That's the last place I want to be right now.
Sure, I said as I leaned my head over against Caltrice's. Damn, I guess that means Zara could have had his own room after all.
I don't think so, Clan would have let him,
Caltrice said with a slight giggle.
He doesn't seem to trust his brother at all.
They've definitely got a Thor-Loki thing going on, I chuckled, even though I knew she wouldn't get the reference. Half the time they act like they're best friends, and the other half they seem like they want to kill each other.
I don't have any siblings, but I've heard that's pretty typical.
So have I. It's still hilarious to watch in person, though. Caltrice scooted backwards, and then she let go of my arm and laid back in the bed. I was right behind her, and we looked into each other's eyes as I began to stroke her hair softly. Caltrice and I continued to talk and joke for another hour or so, and the sorceress seemed to get calmer the more we talked. Then, without warning, she moved in and pressed her lips against mine. Almost immediately, she pulled back and shook her head.
I'm sorry,
she sighed.
I just feel so comfortable and safe around you, Evan. You always know exactly what to say to calm me down, and you actually care about everything I say.
Of course I care, I said. I care about you, Caltrice. Caltrice's brown eyes seemed to glow with excitement as they met mine, and a smile twisted up the sides of her mouth. She then reached down to the tie on her robe and nonchalantly unfastened it. If it wasn't clear with the kiss, it now became very clear. Caltrice wanted me, and I wanted her.